Madhava Kunta Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunta Bihari Gopi Chana Balapa Giravare Hare Gopi Chana Balapa Giravare Hare Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Janana Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvati Gopara Sathir Sathir Shri Shimri Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Charya Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Mananda All glories to assembled devotees All glories to assembled devotees All glories to assembled devotees All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga Jai Prabhupada Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Okay, so today we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18, Perfect Curse by a Brahmin Boy. We are reading texts 34 and 35. So, 34. Brahmanai Chatrabandhurhi Griha Palo Nurupita Sakatam Tagrihed Vasta Andham Bhoktam Arhiti Brahmanai Chatrabandhurhi Griha Palo Nirupita Sakatam Tagrihe Vasta Sabhandham Bhoktam Arhiti Brahmanai Chatrabandhurhi Griha Palo Nurupita Sakatam Tagrihe Vasta Sabhandham Bhoktam Arhiti word. Brahmanai. By the Brahminical order. Kshatrabandhu. The sons of the Kshatriyas. He. Certainly. Grihapala. The watchdog. Nirupita. Designated. Sa. He. Gatam. On what grounds? Tat grihe. In the home of him, the master. Vasta. Keeping at the door. Sabhantam. In the same pot. Bhoktam. To eat. Arhati. Deserves. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The descendants of the kingly orders are definitely designated as watchdogs, and they must keep themselves at the door. On what grounds can dogs enter the house and claim to dine with a master on the same plate? Report. The inexperienced Brahmin boy certainly knew that the king asked for water from his father, and the father did not respond. He tried to explain away his father's inhospitality in an impertinent manner befitting an uncultured boy. He was not at all sorry for the king's not being well received. On the contrary, he justified the wrong act in a way characteristic of the Brahmins of Kali Yuga. He compared the king to a watchdog, and so it was wrong for the king to enter the home of a Brahmin and ask for water from the same pot. The dog is certainly reared by its master, but that does not mean the dog shall claim to dine and drink from the same pot. This mentality of false prestige is the cause of downfall of the perfect social order. And we can see that in the beginning, it was started by the inexperienced son of a Brahmin. As the dog is never allowed to enter within the room and heart, although it is reared by the master, similarly, according to Sringi, the king had no right to enter the house of Samakarishi. According to the boy's opinion, the king was on the wrong side and not his father, and thus he justified his silent father. Okay, and we're doing text 35. Krishna gate bhagavati shastar yupata garnanam tad bina setun adhyaham shashmi pashyatame balam. Translation purport, again by His Divine Grace. After the departure of Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead and supreme ruler of everyone, these upstarts have flourished, our protector being gone. Therefore, I myself shall take up this matter and punish them. Just witness my power. Purport. The inexperienced Brahmin, puffed up by a little Brahmatejas, became influenced by the spell of Kali Yuga. Maharaj Parikshit gave license to Kali to live in four places, as mentioned here and before, but by his expert government, the personality of Kali could hardly find the place allotted him. The personality of Kali Yuga, therefore, was seeking the opportunity to establish authority. And by the grace of the Lord, he found a hole in the puffed-up, inexperienced son of a Brahmin. The little Brahmin wanted to show his prowess and destruction, and he had the audacity to punish such a great king as Maharaj Parikshit. He wanted to take the place of Lord Krishna after his departure. These are the principal signs of upstarts who want to take the place of Sri Krishna under the influence of the age of Kali. There are many false incarnations after the departure of Lord Krishna from the face of the globe, and they're misleading the innocent public by accepting the spiritual obedience of the general mass of people to maintain false prestige. In other words, the personality of Kali got the opportunity to reign through the son of a Brahmin, Sringi. Om Gyanakarandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksarunamikamena Tasma Chitravena. Panchakalpa Trivishcha, Kripa Sindhu Bevacha, Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is here giving a history of the degradation of the social order. And that began with the Brahmins. So the Brahmins, of course, are the head of the social order, and they are meant to give instruction to all other classes of human beings. But when they are similarly, just as they maintain society and religious principles, when they are not qualified, the rest of society tends to decline. So in verse 34, Srila Prabhupada said, this mentality of false prestige is the cause of downfall of the perfect social order, And we can see that in the beginning, it was started by the inexperienced son of a Brahmin. So this is a very, very important lesson for us. You know, when the higher classes, when the educated, intelligent classes are not really educated and not really intelligent, they'll tend to mislead the entire society. And just like today, if we look at who is the intelligentsia that people follow, and Prabhupada often pointed these people out, materialistic scientists, they have sort of taken the place of Brahmins. And of course, we have a whole hodgepodge of different religious ideas. Many of them come from India, really Mayavadi, basically impersonal. So thus, the whole society becomes misled, bewildered, and continues to suffer, especially in Kali Yuga. Now, Sringi did have some knowledge, and he had some Brahma Tejas, some power, you know. So, but he was very young, Prabhupada says. He was inexperienced, and he was overly proud of his abilities. So there was the downfall. Now, Prabhupada points out in the first purport that, he had one point that may have been correct, that Kshatriya should defer to the Brahmins as superior, that is the system. The Kshatriya takes guidance from the Brahmin, and therefore knows how to rule the country and how to do, you know, the administration and the practical maintenance of the society according to spiritual principles that are taught by the Brahmins. But he was completely wrong in another sense, that while Maharaj Prakrit may have caused some offense, Maharaj Prakrit got a little angry in this pastime, of course, and put the snake garland around Shyamaka Rishi's head. So that may have been a mistake on Maharaj Prakrit's part, but it was a very small. Prabhupada points out that it was a minor offense, you know, and it was certainly not concomitant with a severe reaction of Sringi. And it was also wrong that his father did not show proper etiquette. Here, not just a guest, the emperor of the entire country comes to your house. You know, you might ask him in. You might ask him to sit down. You know, of course, it wasn't really his fault because he was in trance and he didn't, you know, meditation and he didn't recognize that Maharaj Prakrit was there. But still, it's understandable that that would have been wrong on his part too. But the worst offense, the worst thing, is that Sringi did not recognize Maharaj Prakrit as a great king, not only a great king, but a great devotee, a great Vaishnava, follower of Lord Krishna, one of Krishna's intimate associates. You know, so this is the real problem that was here. Not understanding who is really a devotee, not understanding who should be respected, given all respect. Now, the role of the Brahmins is very important. They're very dear to Krishna. He's called Brahmanyadev. We have a verse in Go Brahmani Tayacha, protector of the Brahmins. So yes, they are the head of the social order. The Brahman means they know Brahman, or they know the absolute truth. Therefore, with the knowledge of Brahman, they're able to give good counsel to the Kshatriyas and to the rest of society as the knower of the Vedic principles. So in a sense, they become the guardian of society, of ethics, of religious life, of knowledge of the Supreme. So they actually influence all of material life, social interaction, but even more importantly, the spiritual life of the people, so that the society is on a progressive path of spiritual advancement in whatever, you know, classification the people are in. Now, the Varnashram Dharma system and Brahminical culture is valuable as long as it's connected to Krishna and its aim is to serve Krishna. And without such, it would have no value. In fact, this is right in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.8. Is the occupational activity of a man performs according to his own position are so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. So in other words, the purpose of acting according to one's position in Varnashram is to develop attraction for Krishna, attraction for spiritual message, for spiritual knowledge. And in order for Brahmins to be successful in giving the spiritual knowledge, they have to have some qualities and qualification, which we see Sringi was lacking. So these are described. Bhagavad Gita says that 1842 describes the qualities by which Brahmins work. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, and religiousness. These are the natural qualities by which Brahmins work. So Sringi did not demonstrate these qualities. He was hardly peaceful, self-controlled, tolerant, did not really have real knowledge or wisdom, certainly not wisdom, and that's, of course, he was due to his youth, primarily. He hadn't developed any real wisdom. So, rather, he was impulsive and arrogant, you know, and that led to him not understanding the position of Maharaj Parikshit, thinking himself very great, and also wanting to demonstrate his power. He said, you know, it's kind of, just see my power, isn't it, at the end of the last verse. In other words, it's almost like, you think of the demon's almost saying, he's not a demon, but you know, you think of that, it's like, you know, showing how powerful I can become. I am great, you know. So this is the problem. And not recognizing that Maharaj Parikshit was a glorious devotee. His birth, his life, and his death were wonderful. I just want to take a minute to speak a little bit about Maharaj Parikshit, because rarely do we see in Srimad Bhagavatam such extraordinary descriptions all the way through the lifespan of a devotee. His birth was extraordinary, his life as a great king was extraordinary, and his departure, his leaving this world, was even more extraordinary. So who can fathom, you know, the glories of Maharaj Parikshit? In fact, the whole Srimad Bhagavatam was written and spoken about his departure. In other words, all the sages gathered together when they heard that he had been cursed, had 7 days to live. And of course, Shukadeva Swami comes into their midst. And everyone recognizes Shukadeva Swami, his purity and his understanding of Krishna consciousness, being a pure devotee of the Lord. And of course, he speaks the greatest literary treasure in the world, which is Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, I'm just not saying that. All the Goswamis say it, all of the Vaishnavas. Srimad Bhagavatam is that summum bonum. You know, it's that pure Amala Purana that really is, it brings us to the lotus feet of Krishna, and does so in such a wonderful way over 10 cantos, as Prabhupada explains, you know, taking a step-by-step so we first understand thoroughly who Krishna is, who is God, what is our relationship of service and love with him. Then we're ready to hear the 10th canto, which are the wonderful, amazing pastimes of Krishna, which just attract the devotees and, you know, really just gladden our hearts. So, this most wonderful philosophy, most wonderful literary achievement is done partly because of Maharaj Parikshit. I mean, that's, of course, Krishna sets us all up, you know, but because of Maharaj Parikshit's departure. I think his pastime in the womb is very interesting, because rarely do we hear of a devotee not only what happens to them in childhood, but what to speak of when they're in the womb of their mother. That's pretty unusual, because his pastime, of course, was Ashvatthama, who was the son of Drona. He killed the sleeping sons of Draupadi, and then he sends the Brahmastra weapon at Parikshit's mother Uttara, an attempt to kill the last descendant of the Pandus. Because Maharaj Parikshit's grandfather was Arjuna and his father was Abhimanyu, and all of them, other than the 5 Pandavas, the rest of the descendants were all killed by Ashvatthama, murdered. And so the last descendant would have been Parikshit of that dynasty, and so he wanted to kill him also. And of course, Uttara comes running to Krishna, Lord of the Lord, Lord of the universe, you're the greatest of mystics, please protect me. And Krishna raises the Sudarshan Chakra, enters the womb to give protection, and it's explained that he, the Lord, was only thumb high, but he was all, was son of Bhrigu Shanaka. When the child Parikshit, the great fighter, was in the womb of his mother Uttara, and was suffering from the burning heat of the Brahmastra thrown by Ashvatthama, he could observe the Supreme Lord coming to him. He, the Lord, was only thumb high, but he was all transcendental. He had a very beautiful, blackish, infallible body, and he wore a dress of lightning yellow and a helmet of blazing gold. Thus, he was seen by the child. The Lord was enriched with 4 hands, earrings of molten gold, and eyes blood red with fury. As he loitered about, his club constantly circled him like a shooting star. The Lord was thus engaged in vanquishing the radiation of the Brahmastra, just as the sun evaporates a drop of dew. He was observed by the child, who thought about who he was. While thus observed by the child, the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul of everyone, and Protector of the righteous, who stretches in all directions and unlimited by time and space, disappeared at once. And so for the rest of his life, Maharaj Parikshit was searching for Krishna. And of course, Parikshit, the name means examiner. And that's why, because he was always examining to see where is Krishna. So not only was he a great devotee who had Krishna's personal protection, he was a great emperor. He had all good qualities. We've just heard the story of how he came upon Kali, beating the cow, and how he was prepared, raised his sword, prepared to kill. I mean, in other words, he was the defender of the cows, the Brahmins, the devotees, all the people on the earth were his dependents. So obviously then he banishes Kali. Kali has only four, actually five places. There's nowhere where the sinful activities are in Maharaj Parikshit's kingdom, so he says you can go where gold is stored, where there's excess money, which leads to the other four bad qualities often. And when he couldn't even find these, he finds another place to get in. So his, in other words, it almost seems like, you know, okay, well, Maharaj Parikshit defeated me and he banished me, but I'm going to get him here. You know? So it says under the direction of Krishna, Kali influenced Sringi to do this. So it may not be that Sringi was so terrible. Obviously, it's part of Krishna's plan, but he allowed Kali to influence him to perform this very, very bad act, which is, again, all part of Krishna's plan, so the Srimad Bhagavatam could be heard. Now, of course, we're going to be hearing about Sringi's curse and how Maharaj Parikshit is going to die in 7 days of a snake bite. But, of course, he sits by the bank of the river, hears the Bhagavatam. Now, Sringi obviously has many materialistic qualities. And we usually think of materialistic religion as those religions that are really outside of Vaishnavism. You know, that may be like people who worship the demigods or people who are after material benefit or they just want salvation or whatever. So we think of material religion in so many ways. Now this Sringi was a little different, that he was actually a devotee of Krishna. It appears because in text 35, he is saying, he's praising Krishna. Krishna is the protector of the devotees, protector of religious principles. Now that he's left, these upstart kings are going to take over and they're going to influence a dharma. So I have to be the protector of dharma since Lord Krishna has departed. You know, so you know, thinking he's the protector of religion, that's a little arrogant, isn't it? It's all up to me now to make sure that we keep these kings in place. Again, young boy, inexperienced, a little puffed up, proud of his. He had probably one of the last Brahmins to actually have Brahma Tejas. Maybe not one of the last, but you know, of course, Prabhupada said many times Brahmins don't have a power in Kali Yuga like they used to. We could hardly think of a Brahmin who'd be able to, now who could, anyone who could curse somebody, maybe actually die exactly as he had ordered, in a sense. So we can see that these impurities are there in Sringi. And we know, even though he's a devotee of Krishna, that bhakti is often mixed with material modes. We'll talk about mixed devotional service, karma mishra bhakti, or bhakti, or jnana mishra bhakti. In other words, influence of karma and jnana, also probably yoga, all these other things. Karma, primarily, think of materialistic ideas or material desires. So, do devotees have material desires? Well, sure, we all do until we become completely pure and we become free to those. But if one is strictly following the spiritual master, you know, and being very, very careful, one can avoid real calamities, you know, that those material desires may bring about. Obviously, Sringi did not have good instruction here. So one of the ways the devotional service may be mixed is what we are seeing in this pastime, that it's mixed with pride. One may be a devotee, but become proud. And this problem of false pride is so clearly described in this verse in purport. So materialistic practitioners of religion can become very proud of their advancement or their prosperity, going to the heavenly planets or having powers like Brahma Tejas or abilities. So, you know, we understand that. And everything in Srimad Bhagavatam is a lesson. Everything is there for a purpose. You know, there is something to teach us. And one thing that we should learn here
is that all devotees must be very careful not to develop pride, at least not false pride in this way. Because whenever there's some material success or spiritual success, there's always a danger of pride for a devotee. And pride generally means thinking oneself the doer and not understanding that Krishna is behind everything. Krishna is the doer, and giving that credit to Krishna. If a devotee has some success or has some ability, one just sees that as a blessing from Krishna coming from him. Not that we necessarily deserve it or we have some wonderful quality because I can do this or I can do that. So again, we must be very careful. Srila Prabhupada quotes, I've heard him quote a couple times in classes, the biblical injunction, pride comes before a fall. And that's very true. In other words, the best way probably to fall down from Krishna consciousness is to become very arrogant and prideful. That just doesn't work. It's actually almost the antipathy of Krishna consciousness. And this can happen in an advanced state, that one can fall due to pride. So it's not just like this a neophyte, but even a devotee who's fairly experienced. In fact, the Nectar Devotion in chapter 7, Prabhupada explains this. Prabhupada says, it's not a translation of Nectar Devotion. What is it called? Anybody? In other words, his rendition of Nectar Devotion. It's not exactly word for word translate, but we know what it is. Anyway, he says, sometimes even at risk, a sannyasi in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu may accept even a person who is not thoroughly fit to become a disciple. However, if one increases the number of disciples simply for prestige or false honor, he will surely fall down in the matter of executing Krishna consciousness. So this is saying, even up to the level of becoming a spiritual master, that one can fall down if one becomes proud. And the specific example is that I have so many disciples, so, you know, I think I'm really wonderful. Now, fortunately, many, many devotees avoid, you know, this potential source of fall down. You know, but it can happen. And I've seen that. I've seen that in devotees who have actually made some spiritual advancement. And they're starting to get a lot of internal realization. And sometimes, I've seen this happen a couple times that I can think of, those devotees become very proud. And they think, I'm more advanced than other devotees. And as soon as you think, I'm the most advanced devotee, that means you're kind of down there in the least advanced. In other words, you lose, it's gone. You lose that, you know, and we'll talk in a minute about humility. Because the other side of pride is obviously the quality of humility. And it's the quality of humility which is always evident in an advanced devotee. So it is one of the primary qualities of devotees, and we see the juxtaposition here of Sringi and Pariksit. Sringi is arrogant and proud. What is Maharaj, I don't want to, this will be up in later class, so I'm not going to go into it too much, someone else can talk about this, but we know Maharaj Pariksit's attitude. He gets unfairly cursed, and he says, okay, it's Krishna's will. You know, yeah, I probably deserved it. I mean, this is humility to the, you know, highest degree. He says he accepts it. He's going to die in 7 days. Okay. You know, so he shows the side of humility. Sringi shows the side of extreme pride. So why is a devotee humble? It's not because he has low self-esteem. Actually, his self is the most highly advanced when one is actually understanding the self is pure spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, and one is a servant of Krishna, and Krishna and experiences Krishna's love in a reciprocal way, that's the highest understanding, highest happiness. He's humble because, well, I was thinking four reasons here. First, he's unconcerned with any material opulence, anything that he may have. He knows these are temporary. And there's no real cause for pride in anything pertaining to the body. If I have, well, just think of all the opulences. If I have beauty, and I have fortune, don't have that one. If I had money, don't have that one. Anyway, assuming one has some opulences, you know, whether it be power, knowledge, whatever it may be, they usually pertain to the body. It's just a particular body that we've got in this lifetime. You know, I'm a beautiful singer. I'm not. But, or whatever it might be. Secondly, The devotee is not overly proud, which means thinking oneself above others, because he sees everyone as part of Krishna. He sees the equality in all living beings. He also knows that all abilities are coming from Krishna. Krishna may empower his devotees to perform certain services, but everything is coming from him. And also, finally, he sees oneself as very insignificant compared to the greatness of Krishna. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, the qualities of knowledge, 13.8, humility is the first listed. And Prabhupada says, humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. So, that's hard to do sometimes, right? We also seen everyone as equal to oneself. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says, although a Vaishnava is the most exalted person, he is prideless and gives all respect to everyone, knowing everyone to be the resting place of Krishna. In other words, Krishna is the super soul in the heart of every living entity. Now, therefore, we're not superior to anyone or any living entity, because we have that same spiritual quality. There's that spiritual equality, even if there's material difference. And of course, we have Bhagavad Gita 5.18, the humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, sees equal vision, learned and gentle Brahman, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. Krishna says that he's the ability of man in the Bhagavad Gita. And he also says in Bhagavad Gita 10.10, to those who are constantly devoted and serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Which is interesting, because that means even any spiritual knowledge or spiritual understanding we have, that's also coming from Krishna. So not only is any material body, any material ability associated with this body coming from Krishna, but even our ability to know Krishna, to understand Krishna consciousness, is coming from Krishna, also coming, of course, via the spiritual master. So between Guru and Krishna, we are actually empowered, in a sense, with spiritual knowledge. And that is an empowerment. If one has spiritual knowledge, that's not such a common thing. And that does empower us. It empowers us to be able to know the absolute truth, to be able to transmit this to others. We are all acting as, in a sense, all Prabhupada's disciples and grand disciples are the Brahmins of society. Hey, for better or worse, it's us, who have to transmit the spiritual knowledge to the world. So, of course, great responsibility. And there's some line about great power and great responsibility. It's something mundane, but it actually makes sense. With great power, there's great responsibility. So, and the reason that we feel that humility, because in the presence of Krishna, what are we? And what are our meager abilities and our meager powers? People think sometimes, even those who think they can become one with God, what can they do equal to God? Prabhupada say, show me how you can lift Govardhan down a hill. Just lift the large, heavy rock. Have you ever met anyone who actually claimed seriously that they were Krishna? It's pretty rare. I did once. I met somebody out in Miami. He was out on Miami Beach, and he came up to talk to us because he wanted to see his devotees, give us an opportunity. He saw we were devotees, we were dressed and everything. So he wanted, he was going to give us darshan, I guess. So there he is on Miami Beach, laying out in the sun, smoking a cigarette. That was Krishna. Okay. So, it was almost comical. You couldn't even get mad at him, almost because it was such a farce. And he probably wasn't all mentally there. Anyway, Hari Bhakti Vilas, quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjhima 22.100, says the six divisions of surrender are the acceptance of those things favorable to devotional service, rejection of unfavorable things, the conviction that Krishna will give protection, the acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master, knowing Krishna as the maintainer, full self-surrender, complete dependence on the Lord, and humility. So this is advancement, totally depending upon the Lord, humility. And of course, Lord Chaitanya left the most instruction on humility. Chinadapi sunechana, karori vasa vishnuna, manina mani nadena, kirtaniya sadahari. One should think himself lower than the grass, more tolerant than the tree, one who does not expect honor, always prepared to give all respect to others, can very easily chant the holy name of the Lord. So this is the recipe for success in Krishna consciousness. And Lord Chaitanya said we should wear this verse as a garland around our neck, right? It's that important. Lord Chaitanya said this is like one of the most important qualities is this idea of humility, becoming very tolerant, not thinking oneself high, always giving respect to others. It's hard to do, isn't it, always to give respect to others. These things are not necessarily easily. I had this experience during Kartik. You know, everybody does some vow for Kartik, you know. I chanted the extra rounds, but I decided to make a vow for Kartik to not criticize devotees. You know how hard it is to go a month without criticizing devotees? Boy, that was one of the biggest austerities they've ever taken on. You know? Anyway, but I'm trying to continue that to some degree, so I don't criticize as much as I used to. Because it does you no good whatsoever. It's of absolutely no value. And all it does is brings one's consciousness down, you know, and causes dissension and difficulties. And, you know, so one way I found that I do this is I never go on social media, ever. I haven't ever in my life, you know, because that is the best way to find yourself full of criticism for other devotees. I mean, it's terrible. I mean, the things that happen. Where I was just thinking, didn't you say one time that, you know, Sringi was talking with his young friends or something? It's kind of like they all bolstered him up. It was like going on social media, you know, and he goes on Facebook and, you know, oh yeah, you're right, you know, and kind of get him all worked up. Yeah, Maharaj Prickett was wrong, you know. So you come to not always the best conclusion. So the devotee does not see spiritual distinction based on position. In the Nectar of Instruction, verse 5, it says, one should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. One should offer humble obeisance to the devotee who's undergoing spiritual initiation, diksha, and is engaged in worshiping the deity. One should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who's advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. That's the Uttamadhikar. That's one of the qualities of one who is a pure devotee. It doesn't have a propensity to criticize. Now, that doesn't mean, Prabhupada said, doesn't mean that you don't call a thief a thief. I mean, you know, sometimes truth needs to be spoken. And that doesn't mean everyone is acting wonderfully. And for preaching, we do make these distinctions, as mentioned, the three distinctions that Nectar of Instruction just mentioned. You know, so that's there. In other words, we always have to balance Krishna conscious philosophy, not just go on one side and then, well, what about this? What about? No, you have to. In fact, Prabhupada said that's one of the definitions of intelligence. Intelligence is the ability to be able to maintain, to be able to understand contradictory information and synthesize it. I don't know if you use the word synthesize, but that's basically what it's saying. In other words, it's like a Chinta Beta Beta Tattva. Right? Simultaneously, one and different. How can it be one and different? You know, no, the devotee understands all these things. It can be this way. And we know there are situations when Srila Prabhupada spoke very strongly about things like atheists, materialistic scientists, and Mayavadis primarily. That's what he primarily spoke about. He didn't speak strongly about people of other religions. He didn't criticize, you know. So this can be a problem. Pride, but sometimes Krishna curbs our pride. Some of us may have experienced this. We may get proud of something, and I used to experience these in little ways all the time. I'd be chanting a verse, and I just in my mind, little thought was, I'm chanting this very nicely. Then guaranteed I would stumble over the next verse. I mean, it's just guaranteed. I could just almost predict it happened. So Krishna's always kind of working, Krishna works to make us humble. We may not listen to the lesson, but Krishna's giving this lesson because he wants us to become humble, which means knowing our position as a devotee at his lotus feet. Okay? One way that we see examples of Bhagavatam, how Krishna curbs the pride of a devotee, is with Indra. Indra gets his pride curbed a lot, I think. You know, it seems to be a chronic problem, issue. I don't know where this verse is. I got a Krishna book, page 226. I assume this is after the Govardhan Hill debacle, at least on Indra's side, it's the debacle, where he says, Within this material world, there are many fools like myself who consider themselves to be the Supreme Lord or the all in all within the universe. You are so merciful that without punishing their offenses, you devise means so their false prestige is subdued, and they can know you and no one else are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Indra certainly got his pride a little bit crushed there by the lifting of Govardhan Hill. And he does protect his sincere devotees from pride often. This was interesting in the second canto in the ninth chapter where the four Chatur slokas are spoken to Lord Brahma. Before that, he says in 2932, O my Lord, the unborn, you have shaken hands with me just as a friend does with a friend. I shall be engaged in the creation of different types of living entities, and I shall be occupied in your service. I shall have no perturbation, but I pray that all this may not give rise to pride, as if I were the Supreme. So Lord Brahma is one of the few amongst us who might have some good reason to be proud. He only creates universes. You know. But he says, in this process of creation, don't let me become proud of this. Let me understand you. And then, of course, Krishna speaks the four Chatur Shlokas. He gives Brahma complete knowledge. And of course, these four Chatur Shlokas, they expand ultimately to Bhagavatam, etc. And then Krishna says, O Brahma, just follow this conclusion by fixed concentration of mind, and no pride will disturb you, neither in the partial nor in the final devastation. So in this way, if one is following Krishna's instructions through the spiritual master, and as one is fixed in this philosophy, Krishna will help protect us from pride, as he speaks to Lord Brahma. But it is something to be mindful of, and we can see that this pride ended up basically with the fall down of the Brahminical order and the introduction of Kali Yuga. Kali entering this age through the pride and arrogance, through Sringi, this misguided young Brahmin boy. So very important points and principles have been spoken of here in the Bhagavatam and by Srila Prabhupada and the purports. Hey, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Any questions, comments? No? Okay, last chance. Thank you. I'll go to Prabhupada.